As we're moving to the very end of the Torah, we find in Mishneh Torah, which is theoretically a repetition, that more often than not, when we have things repeated in Sefer Dvarim, they're repeated with additional information that we did not necessarily know previously. Over here, it says, source number one, Vayichtov Moshe et haTorah hazot, ve'inai lekohanim b'nei Levi, hanosim et Aaron brit Hashem, ve'el kol zeknei Yisrael. That means the Torah is coming towards its completion. Of course, this is somewhat of a question. If the physical written Torah is completed, then is it added over with what we're about to find? And for that matter, we have Parshat Hazinu, and for that matter, we have Parshat Vezota Bracha. So there was a little banter before I started. So generally, the question about the integrity of the authorship of the Torah is raised regarding, at least the Gemara raises it, regarding the last eight verses of the Torah, that we will gently place aside right now. Pasuk Yud, it says, Vayitzav Moshe Otam Lemar, Moshe instructed, saying, Miketz Sheva Shanim. Now the word Miketz is a word that it means in a boundary, in a sense. The question always comes up whenever you have the word Miketz, is it going to be the beginning? Is it going to be the end of that boundary? Over here, Miketz Sheva Shanim, B'moed Shnat HaShmitah B'chag HaSukkot. So it sounds like at the end of 7 years, Miketz Sheva Shanim, because otherwise it would be the beginning of the 7 years, but I know that sounded a little funny to say it like that, but it's universally accepted that it's that this means at the end of the 7 years. Of course, and whenever something's universally accepted, it means except for the Ibn Ezra, who may not understand it that way. I'm not completely convinced what the Ibn Ezra says. Maybe we'll have a chance to take a look at it. Miketz Sheva Shanim, at the end of 7 years, B'moed Shnat HaShmitah, during the year of the Shemitah, B'chag HaSukkot and the Halei Sukkot. Now, of course, there's a problem, because if we're talking about at the end of the Shemitah year, at the end of 7 years, at the end of the seven-year cycle, and therefore at the end of the Shemitah, that gets a little complicated, because, again, are we talking... Is it this year or last year? So I said it's universally this year, except...
This year at the end of the 7 years?
Right, but the problem is the language. The language over here is confusing, because if it's the end of the Shemitah year, Shemitah ended as Rosh Hashanah began. So Shemitah ended at the end of the month of Elul. So if Shemitah ended, then why would you call it Miketz Sheva Shanim, the end of 7 years, B'moed Shnat HaShmitah, during the Shemitah year, so that would make it sound like it was indeed last year, B'chag HaSukkot, because this Chag HaSukkot is not going to be Shemitah. On the way here, somebody who I'm married to, I don't want to say who, said today we're going to go to Mashtela, and today, because she said, Shemitah's over. I said, well, maybe it's not over. Let's see. Pasuk Yud Aleph says, Bivo kol Yisrael leraot et pnei Hashem Elokecha b'makom yisher yivchar, that when people are going to be ola leregel, where they're going to come up for a pilgrimage, tikra et haTorah hazot neged kol Yisrael b'neihem, this Torah should be read in front of all the people, and therefore you see the connection with Pasuk Tet, where it talks about the completing of the writing of the Torah, so now the Torah is going to be read in front of the people. Hakel, which means to gather, Hakel et ha'am, anashim v'nashim v'ataf, v'gircha shebishirecha, l'man yishmu, l'man yilmadu, v'yiru et Hashem elokeichem, v'shamru lasot et kol divrei ha'Torah zot. So why are we gathering together? And it's everybody. It's the men, it's the women, it's the children, it's the converts, everybody, or not even the converts, the strangers within the midst. Everyone's going to be there, and you read it in front of everybody. Why? It says, so that they should hear, that they should learn, that they should fear God, they should know how to guard and to do the various things which it says in the Torah. So, what exactly is the purpose of this? I think last year we discussed this and we went into the Rambam a little bit, and the Rambam seems to present it as if that this is a re-experiencing of the Har Sinai revelation, that the whole entire Jewish people were gathered for the revelation at Sinai. So this would sound to be that on a basis every 7 years, you would do this again. Of course, the questions that would come up with this would be, okay, so what does that have to do with the Shemitah on the one hand? What does it have to do with Sukkot on the other hand? Which means there are better days of the calendar that we can gather that we can gather people. Just for example, if people are already being Ol L'Regel for Chag Shavuot, wouldn't Chag Shavuot be a nice time to rekindle a Matan Torah type of experience? I'm just saying, just as a possible thought. Okay, we're going to skip the Ramban because the Ramban will tell us what the Pshat actually is, and instead we'll look in some other places. The Targum, which we'll look first in the Targum Yonatan in source 3, Kimshu Yat Ama Guvraya Lamelef Unashai Lamishma Ulpana. Anybody ever wondered where the word Ulpana came from? So over here you have Ulpana. You can look at the Hebrew translation of that in source 4. Isfuta Nashim Lumod Vinashim Lishmoa. So those of you who may be discerning some kind of sexism over here, you can see it more clearly in Rashi. Source number 5, Ha'anashim l'mod v'anashim l'shmoa. The men come to learn, and the women come to hear. V'ataf l'mava. So what are the kids doing here? L'teit z'char l'miveyahim. That whoever brought them should bring z'char. Now, this Rashi, on the one hand, is very straightforward and simple. On the other hand, is very, very difficult. It's very straightforward and simple when we look at the source that he took it from, but it's very, very difficult when you look at the actual psukim. Because if you go back to the pasuk itself, if you look at Pasuk Yud Bet, back in Source 1, so let's pay a little more attention now. Hakel, so let's get that out of the way. Gather. Who are we gathering? Et Ha'am. Who's the Am? The Am is everybody. Ha'anashim v'anashim v'ataf v'gircha. So we have three or four, let's say four different categories. Anashim, nashim, taf v'gircha, shebisharecha. What are those categories supposed to do? L'man yishmu'u, l'man yilmedu, v'yiru'ot Hashem. So the first one, either everything is for everybody, which is what the Ramban says, or it should be in the sequence that it's put out. So the anashim, the men, should be yishmu'u. The women should be yilmedu. But what we have over here is the Gemara is going to work with some knowledge, and the knowledge that it has is that, hold it, how appropriate should this be that the women should be the ones that are learning and the men should only be listening? And the bias there would be that listening sounds more passive and learning sounds more active. Now, by the way, I would have said, just in terms of pshat, I would have said, if you want to break it up, I would have said, yeah, this can fit in perfectly. I can then claim that the men who have learned more generally have more knowledge, so it's just yishma'u, it can be more passive, because they're already aware of it. But people who are less aware of this, the nashim, who don't learn, so therefore yilmedu, therefore at this point they would learn, but there seems to be this, as I said, I would be very tempted to say that as pshat, but it seems to want to pull away from this. I, at one point, this week wasn't so long, so that means it was at some point yesterday. I at one point was thinking, talking more in terms generally, the issue of women learning. It seems to make its way into discussions again and again, but it's just surprising because there's actually a little bit too much discussion. Very recently, one of the Rashiva in YU came and said that he felt that maybe we need to reconsider women's learning because look where this has led us to. And obviously, mixed dancing, we saw that. You saw where that came from. We're leading into women being rabbis and so on and so forth. I'll just make a point that among the Hasidisher Beis Yaakovs and educational system, I mean, the whole fight took place whether, when they opened up the first Beis Yaakov, whether they should have the women davening together or separately. Because if the women all daven together, then it looks like a minyan. And ultimately, all of these problems, quote-unquote, that they all go back to Beis Yaakov, which means Beis Yaakov started this revolution, and because of Beis Yaakov is why you have women rabbis today. So now, No, it's true. What I'm saying is 100% true. But there were some interesting discussions going back and forth between the Belzer Rebbe and some other Hasidic Rebbes regarding this point. And one side said, no, we never allowed the women to daven together. We made them daven separately so that it would never go in any direction. I happen to have in front of me, this is just to amuse you a little bit, or to amuse me a little bit. This is actually written by a Belzer leader in Borapur, Rav Shlomo Cohen Gross, Bidin Limud Nash Limud Torah Lenashim, and he starts and he says, Hinei Hikshu L'Shol. People have asked, Kimika Halatzno Lahatira Tamufurash Bishas Ubeposkim LeYisur. Who is going to allow, which is clearly stated in the Gemara and the Poskim, which is not allowed in terms of women learning? So I just want to say something. You can go through all the sources, going back, which we're not going to do, going back from the original Mishnah, which is Mishnah in Sota, which is Machlok between Rabbi Elazar and Ben Azai. Ben Azai says it's a mitzvah for a man to teach his daughter Torah, and Rabbi Ben Hyrcanus never said it's Asr. By the way, that's what's important. He said, Kol ha-malamdo bito Torah ke'ilu malamdo tiflut. He says that this is not a good idea. He never said it's Asr. Which means what he says right here, that all the poskim throughout the generations, from the Gemara all the way through, have all said it's Asr. Quite the opposite. No one said it was Asr. 1 second, it's very important. No one said it's Asr. Go and find me one source where it says, in any place, that women are not allowed to learn. Now you can fill anything that you want. You know, in that sentence, they can't learn Gemara, they can't learn, never says in these sources. What it does talk about are issues of curriculum, what it does talk about what should normally be taught. And I'm going to say one more thing, I'm going to move off of this topic unless you don't let me. The issue that Rabbi Rilg was raising, really, maybe we need to reconsider whether women should be taught Gemara. Of course we should reconsider it. Before you get upset, we should reconsider whether men should learn Gemara. All that we're going to accomplish by putting Gemara in the curriculum of high schools is that the girls will be as turned off as the boys are. I mean, what we should be doing is quite the opposite. We should be giving the boys, the girls' curriculum, which has been far more successful over the years than the boys' curriculum has been. Which means we made some kind of a basic mistake at some point by saying that yeshiva education should be for everybody, and then we should have the curriculum, which was the tradition. You mentioned Volozhin yeshiva before. And the curriculum that we have in the yeshiva should be the exact same curriculum as Volozhin. Well, guess what? That's what you remember from Volozhin. Well, guess what? Not everybody got into Volozhin. Not everybody had the interest, aptitude, and skill in order to be able to carry that kind of a load. So is there room for an educational overhaul? Of course there is, by men and by women, and that, let's put on the side. No, this is just silly. This is just silliness. It's starting with this perspective. What's the matter?
Rashi taught his daughters, he didn't have sons, and he taught his daughters everything. They wore tefillin, talis, tefillin.
There's no source for that.
There is no source for that?
No.
Okay, that's what I...
No, not anyway. What Rashi's correct. As I said, I don't want to spend too much time on this. Rashi's daughters, I'll go further. Whether Rashi sold wine, or as Professor Chaim Soloveitchik said, was an egg salesman, we have no idea. Right? But everybody knows that Rashi sold wine. Except for Rashi doesn't necessarily know that he sold wine. No historical evidence whatsoever that Rashi was a wine salesman. Okay, 1 second. Full stop. No historical evidence that Rashi's daughters put on tefillin. There is one source that says, in the time of Rashi, more or less, and I say within 100 years, that certain women who were righteous women put on tefillin. Somebody must have decided, oh, Rashi's daughters were righteous women. Righteous women did it. So therefore, hence, Rashi's daughter, therefore Rashi's daughters put on tefillin. As I said, you will find absolutely no source, unless, of course, you Google it, then you'll find 1,000 people who said it, but you'll find no one who actually has a source that says this. Whether Rashi taught his daughters everything or not is also a very good question or not. But let's leave any anecdotal evidence. Were there women in Jewish history who were extremely knowledgeable? Yes. Point taken, 100%. For someone over here to say that this is absolutely usur and so on is great. And again, you can hear certain people say this. It's great except for one problem. There's absolutely no place that says that it's usur, unless it's somebody who's copying from sources like he's going. The Gemara doesn't say it. The Rambam doesn't say it. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't say it. There is a hesitation, 100%. There's a hesitation. On the other hand, let me just put it a little differently, and this is already what the Rama writes in the Shulchan Aruch, which is based upon earlier sources, that the big difference would be that women are obligated to learn any kind of halacha that has to do with what's called halacha lamaisa. Right? By the way, there were those who disagreed. There were those who disagreed with that and said, no, women shouldn't learn anything. They should just learn whatever their mothers did. No, whatever their mothers did, they should mimic what their mothers did. There are those opinions. It's not what the Rama paskins. The Rama paskins that any halacha that has to deal with a woman, she should do, which therefore means, if you look at Shulchan Aruch, it's Aruch Chaim, Yerodea, Evne Ezer, and Choshe Mishpat. Now, those of you who didn't read, right? Otherwise, how could she walk into a store and make any kind of a kinyan? If you don't know Choshe Mishpat, how can you make a kinyan? You pick this up and you dropped it. Is it yours? Is it theirs? You say to the cab driver, I'll pay you 20 shekel, it'll take me there. Is there already a kinyan or not? Any kind of kinyan, you have to know Choshe Mishpat. You can't do any commerce unless you know Choshe Mishpat. Yerodea, well, they may, if you want to keep them in the kitchen, like you said, then they need to know Yerodea. They need to know so you need to know Yerodea. You need to know Choshe Mishpat. Evne Ezer, well, that has to do with marriage. That has nothing to do with, that may have to do with women as well, because it's to do with marriage, so they may have to know Evne Ezer. So now you're left with Aruch Chaim. So good. We can do all of Aruch Chaim except for putting on tefillin, right? But we could do Aruch Chaim Shabbos and holidays and so on. But except that anything which is either mitzvah, sorry, Zerah, Gemara, woman can still do it in terms of Rishut. So therefore she needs to learn that as well. So basically you're left with that a woman needs to know four Chelkei Shulchan Aruch, which, by the way, I can assure you 99.9% of rabbis don't know. So they need to know four Chelkei of Shulchan Aruch. And in order to understand Shulchan Aruch, it's not you need to know a little bit of reasoning behind it, a little bit of reasoning behind it. You basically ended up, if you understand the sugyas behind it, so now you got, they don't have to know Kadshim. I don't know. But although there are midrashim that say during the first phase of Migdash, every single woman and child knew Kachim and Taros. So therefore they did know Kachim and Taros. Okay, so now what are you going to do? So the main thing, if you really want to get down to it, it's the theoretical learning, which some of you would call, in a very negative way, you would call pilpul. It's pilpul that has no practical application to it. Women shouldn't learn, which then gets me back to the main question, and men should be learning it? Which means, over here, anything which comes down to a practical learning. So let's gently push this aside, because we decided not to talk about this, because we have far more interesting things to talk about. But it is interesting that when you look at the Rashi over here, Rashi inverted it. Ha'anashim lilmod v'noshim lishmoa. But if you follow the psukim, that was an and the Mizrahi, one of the commentators on Rashi in Source 6, says, he observes, yeah, ha'anashim lilmod v'noshim lishmoa, dekra de l'man yishmu l'man yilmodu, l'man yishmu shav al ha'anashim. That must go back to the women. L'man yilmodu shav al ha'anashim goes back to the men, so therefore you basically have inverted the pasuk in a very strange way in order to produce this particular reason. Now, why did Rashi do this? Rashi did this because he had a source that did it, which goes back almost all the time to understand Rashi. Source number 7, Tanur Rabbanan. This is Gemara in Chagiga. Masav Rabbi Yochanan ben Burk of Rabbi Elazar ben Chasma sheholchulak lahakbil pnei Rabbi Yeshua b'Pekin. So you have two rabbis who went on a Yom Tov. They went to visit Rabbi Yeshua in the city called Pekin. Amalahem. Rabbi Yeshua says, "Ma chiddush here beBeit Midrash Yom? What was the chiddush in the Beit Midrash?" Amru lo tamidecha anu mecha anu shotim. You're asking us about what was taught in the Beit Midrash. We came to hear from you. Amalahem afal pichein ef shel beBeit Midrash below chiddush. It can't be that you in the Beit Midrash and there was nothing new that was learned or taught today. Shabbat shomi haita. Whose Shabbat was this? So those of you who don't know the story about the rebellion in the Beit Midrash, which is told the Gemara in Brachot on Daf Kaf Zayin, where at some point they had enough of Rabbi Gamliel and they replaced him with Lazar ben Azariah, and then afterwards they made a deal that they brought back Rabbi Gamliel, but they made it 3 weeks out of the month Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi, and one Shabbat out of the month was Lazar ben Azariah's turn. It's probably a very good idea in every shul, right? So he says, Shabbat Shomi Aita, whose turn was it? So he says Shabbat Shabbat Elazar ben Azariah Haita. It was Elazar ben Azariah was on duty. Uvimeh Haita Haggadah Hayom. So what did he teach? Amrulo b'parashat Hakel. So he taught about Parashat Hakel. Umed Harish. By the way, he's pulling teeth here. What did he say? Finally gets him to say, Hakel ata amanashim anashim bataf, imanashim bo im lilmod. So this is where Rashi got it from. If the men came to learn, v'nashim bo lishmoa, and the women come to hear, taf lama bayin. So why do the kids come? Now there's a big question that the first I'm going to deal with, which we're not going to look at today, is how old are the taf? Most of the Mefarshim on the Chumash here will tell us that not like this Gemara, and they'll say that Taf would be anyone under Bar Mitzvah, would already be called Taf. This Gemara makes it sound that perhaps it's a little bit younger than that. Taf Lama Bayim, because apparently they're not going to be listening and they're not going to be learning. Kedelitin Skar Lamiveyahin, in order just to bring Skar to those who brought them. Amr lahem, margolit tova hayta b'yideichem. You had something so valuable. Uvekashtim labdami meni. You wanted to take it away from me. So now, part of the question is why was he so excited about this? But again, let's go piece by piece. This is where Rashi got this teaching from, that the men are coming to learn and the women are coming to hear. What, by the way, is the difference between learning and hearing? I'm also not that clear. And over here, we're not dealing with Torah Shebaal Peh. We're dealing with Torah Shebichtav. Somebody would read Torah Shebichtav. So that means that theoretically everybody comes to hear. But pause there for a second. Just to explain, and this is really all parenthetical, and it was only because it occurred to me, and at the end I saw the Meshech Chachma said the same thing, so that's how he made it here also. Why was Rabbi Yeshua so enamored with this position? In Pirkei Avot, in Source 8, we find that Yochanan Zakkai had 5 students, and he enumerated the praise of all the students. What did he say about Rabbi Yeshua? Yeshua ben Chananya, he said, Ashrei Yuladato. Right? Praise is the woman who gave birth to him. The Bar Tanua explains, and this may be somewhat an embellishment, because we'll see in a second where he got it from. Ashrei Yuladato, Mu'ushar b'midot tovot ad shakol ulam omrim alav Ashrei Yuladato. He was raised properly at good... He had good midot, so everyone says, oh, his mother raised him right. I wonder if they say the opposite. V'yesh omrim, al shem shehi groma lo sheyeh chacham. She's the one who caused him to learn. Shehaita machzeret akol batei midrash shebi'ira. She would go to every single Beit Midrash in the city. And again, I don't know where he got this part from. V'omeret lahem b'vakasha mikem b'kshu rachamim ala ubar hazeh shebamai sheyeh chacham. While she was still pregnant, this sounds like Rivka going from the... And Yaakov, not Esau. And going to the shuls and asking to daven for my offspring that will end up becoming sheyeh chacham. U'miyom shenolad... As I said, we'll see in a second the source. Umiyom shenolad, from the day he was born, talk about babysitting services, lo hotzia arisato mibeit hamidrash. She never took his crib out of the Beit Midrash. Kidei shelo yikansu baznav elo divrei Torah. That the only background music he should ever hear should be the background music of learning. The Rishalmi, which I think is where this comes from in Source 10, it says that the rabbis once came to visit Rav Dosa ben Hyrcanus, and then at the end, we're skipping the whole content of the conversation, but at one point he looks up and he sees the various rabbis, where it's underlined, Amma talun shnei nai, dinechami l'chachmei Yisrael. He looks up to see the rabbis. Ra'at Rabbi Yeshua, he sees Rabbi Yeshua, v'kora olav, and he reads the pasuk following about him, et mi yoredeya. Zochorani shahaita imo molechet arisato lebeit hakneset bishvil shidatku aznav v'divrei Torah. I remember, and I can read in here, occasionally his mother would take his carriage or his to the Beit Midrash, Beit Knesset, it says, in order that he should hear the sounds of Torah. So from that to the Bar Tanura saying that she never took it out of the Beit Midrash, you see a little bit of an embellishment. So now, if Rabbi Yeshua was the one whose mother took him to the Beit Midrash to hear Torah, so it's interesting. He's the one who says, oh, there was such a valuable thing, you're trying to take it away from me. Although it's interesting because there it seems to be the way that he was told this teaching was that the merit of bringing the taf is just to give the merit to the one who brings. Over here, according to his own life story, it's not just merit of bringing, it's that the listening has an impact even when we think it's not doesn't necessarily have an impact. This, listen, if someone can convince you to play Beethoven for your flowers, and it's gonna your plant, it's gonna grow. We do that. It's gonna grow a little bit better. So then why would you think that for a child to be listening to the sound of the Kol Torah, the sound of Torah being taught, it's not going to have some kind of an impact? Okay. So you're thinking about the Ger and the Rambam. So let's slow down for 1 second. We'll go back to the Mekshe Chacham in source 11 says a lot of what I just now said, so we're not going to read it. I thought I came up with it, then I found that he said it. So we'll have to give him the credit. Go back to the Ramban that we skipped in source number 2. And maybe we'll read the Pasuk one more time in source number 1. We'll read in source number 1 the Pasuk Yudbet. Hakela ta'ama nashim v'nashim v'ata v'gircha shebesherecha l'man yishmu'u l'man yilmudu v'yiru'u et Hashem Elokeich. Okay, source number 2, the Ramban. L'man yishmu'u v'l'man yilmudu ha'nashim v'hanashim. Oh, look what he did. He didn't divide them at all. He goes, everyone's going to learn and everyone's going to hear. L'man yishmu'u v'yilmudu. And look at the sequence. Everyone's going to hear. And what happens when you hear? You learn. L'man yishmu'u v'yilmudu. Who does this apply to? Ha'anashim v'hanashim. Ki gam hein shom'ot v'lomdot li'ra et Hashem. Because they're also going to listen in order to fear God. Look what he just now did. He said, read the pasuk. Why are you chopping it up into pieces? And again, I'm sorry for doing this one more time. Right? Hakela ta'amata anashim v'hanashim v'ata v'gir chashu v'sherecha l'man yishmu'u u'l'man yilmadu v'yiru et Hashem alokeichem. Why are you breaking it up? He's saying that everything deals with everything. And there is one thing. But by the way, I think he says exactly what Naomi wanted to say. He says, what's the purpose here? The purpose is to listen and to learn and therefore to fear God. Which means the whole thing over here is at the end of the day, this experience, which, although I don't want to say that it's just an inspiration, it's in order to get towards... Maybe we'll talk about it. I mean, I said before, the Rambam is very, very clear about this as being a re-experience of Sinai. And the whole idea of gathering everyone together is this re-experience, perhaps, of Sinai. But it is something which should be inspirational. But there is a learning component as well. Okay. Source number 12, Rashi. We're going back to Miketz Sheva Shanim, at the end of 7 years, Bishana Rishona Shel Shmita. So what did Rashi just now say? Shana Rishona Shel Shmita. So what does that mean? Which year is this? The 8th year, or the 1st year. It depends how you, the 8th year is the 1st. You have a 7-year cycle. So what's the 8th year? The 1st year. Miketz Sheva Shanim, at the end of 7 years, Bishana Rishona Shel Shmita. Shehi Shana Shminit. That's the 8th year. So just to be very, very clear. V'loma kore ota shana hashmita. Oh, that's a very good question. Why are we still calling this shana hashmita? Sha'adayin shviyit nohegit ba dikatsir shel shviyit ayotze l'motzoi shviyit. Because there's still laws of shviyit which apply right now. Right? Certainly regarding what? Certainly regarding fruit. So therefore, there's still Kedushat Shviyat on the fruit. So therefore, to call the 1st year on Sukkot, call it the 8th year, makes a lot more sense than we allowed to in the beginning. Chizkuni writes, Miketz Sheva Shanim, B'tchila Hashana, in the beginning of the year, L'man Yilmedu Kol Hashana, in order they learn the entire year, kamoshim forash v'olech b'chag l'sukot b'vakol Yisrael. V'mo'ed shnat ha-shmita, me'afa shihi shana rishona shel sheva shanim shel shmita, lamu korei ota shnat ha-shmita, tshuva l'davar l'fi shadayin din shviyin oheg ba b'katsir, hayotze mikatsir shviyin. Now, he is very similar to Rashi, but he did add something. But he added something which is, it amuses me a little bit, because a number of the more modern commentaries have said this. If you look in some of the Shemitah books, Rav Rimon, for example, he works very hard to find somebody who says this, and he did not find the Chizkuni. he says that he'll find you Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, and he'll find the Rav Yisraeli, again, people much, much closer to Yisraeli's 20th century. And he says it's hinted at the Ibn Ezra. What are they referring to? And this is really what we're going to try to focus on for the rest of the shir. That he just said, this is done in order that they learn the entire year. Leman yulmidu kol hashana. Hold on to that for a second. Look at source 14. Chizkuni and 14, the Hadir Zakenim, they both come more or less from the school of Tosfot. Miketz sheva shanim tekrat Torah, atat zirich sheishmu afilo atav, kafi shehim pnuyim mikol avodat adama, kol yimot hashabbat, ma she'en ken bishar shanim. That during the entire Shemitah year, people are free. They don't have to do the chores in the field. Why? Even the kids. They don't have to do chores in the field. Why? Because there's no work to be done. Now, there's something here which works a little backwards. Let's read the Ibn Ezra. Because, as I said, people get it from the Ibn Ezra because it was a more accessible work in source 15. Miked Shevan Shanim, Tchilat HaShana, the beginning of the year. Leman Yilmadu, Kol HaShana, Gam Ken HaShabbat, Beger, okay. That was it. Kol Hashanah. Gam Kein HaShabbat. Leman Yilmadu Kol Hashanah. The entire year. So pause there. Just for the converts. V'gercha ulai yityahed. Maybe they will convert.
So v'gercha
is
a stranger, not a...
Right. The stranger in your midst. Ulai yityahed. That's the way he understands this. Okay, so let me say what may not be clear to all of you yet, which really does come out of this Ibn Ezra and this Chizkuni and the Hadar Zakenim. They're all pointing towards the same thing. The end, and we could debate if this is the end or the beginning, it doesn't make that much of a difference. The end of the Shemitah year has a massive rally. The massive rally is a massive Torah rally where Torah is focused on, Torah is learned. Okay, hold on to that. Let's think about that for a second. Primarily, the Shemitah year is an agricultural year. I think there are certain terms that we can use, social justice and so on, right? That would seem to fit into this. The Shemitah year is a year where I don't work the land. So now, what would be the proper way to make a siyum, right? I don't know another word to use.
Siyum?
A siyum. What would be the proper way to make a siyum on the Shemitah year? How do you end the Shemitah year? So I could say, let's end the year by everybody going out to the field and taking the pitchfork and, you know, sticking it in the ground, which means you deal with something which is basically agricultural. So then how do you go? Now, it's interesting that when you look at the laws of Shemitat Ksafim, which cancels the loans at the very end of the year, which is why you made a prusable the last day of the year, it cancels loans at the end of the year, that may really be the end of the Shemitah year. And if you want to work this out a little bit better, the entire year the farmer couldn't work the land, so all the other people are coming and taking whatever produce he has and made it completely hefker. Right? So now how does the farmer live during that year? How does he live? Because other people give him loans. So now what happens to the loans? The loans get canceled, which basically evens things out. You've been eating my food all year. I've been living off of your money all year. So there, just like you've been even, this was free, now this becomes free, and that's the way that the Shemitah year comes to an end with this, right, with this, you know, parallel gesture. Now, what was added in Hakel, which we didn't know from the other sections of Shemitah, is that there is a ceremony that takes place. This is the end of Shemitah ceremony. What is the content of the end of Shemitah ceremony? It is not content of doing something in agriculture. It's not even content of reading something about agriculture, although maybe I'll qualify that. It's not content in terms of talking specifically about the Shemitah Ksafim. It doesn't really focus on Shemitah at all. What it does focus on is Sefer Devarim, and that's why you ask, so what do we read? Sefer Devarim, to a very large extent, talks about coming to the land, deserving the land, inheriting the land, staying in the land, or maybe getting kicked out of the land. So it is very land-based, but it's very land-based in a very, you know, elevated sense. Now, if the ceremony, which is celebrating the end of Shemitah, is a ceremony of reading and studying and listening to and being inspired to Torah, does that somehow tell me about the entire year? So that's what we just now may have missed in passing that was said by all those sources, by the Chizkuni and Hadrus Kenim and by the Ibn Ezra, is that all year round, when the farmer is not farmering, so then what... So what is he doing? So say, he's learning. Great. Where did that come from? So that's what I'm saying. Where did it come from that's what... Wonderful. Good, wonderful. So who was the one who actually said that, which we're getting on an intuitive level, who actually said that? So the answer is those sources we just now said that. As I said, you can look at Rav Rimon's book. He works very, very hard. He says it's simple that this is what Shemitah is, a year to be more spiritual, involved in godliness and so on, but where do you see it? All that we see is agricultural. You take the year off. So maybe the guy can sit at home and catch up on all the movies he hasn't seen in the last 6 years. Which means, where do you see that there's actually this spiritual Torah side of things? And what you said, it's like Shabbat, is wonderful. You'll see the Ibn Ezra. You'll see in a second. The Ibn Ezra says exactly that in another very surprising place. He says this. So therefore, the fact that the ceremony to end the Shemitah year is a Torah-involved ceremony, therefore, it gives me information about what was being done during the entire Shemitah year. So I'm saying that logic is not stated clearly any place in the Gemara. That logic is not stated any place in any Midrash. That logic is hinted at by these couple of sources that I just now brought to you over here. The Ibn Ezra, where he compares it to Shabbat, is in source number 16, surprisingly, on which pasuk? Zochor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. The Ten Commandments. Where he says, Hu HaKatuv Sheshit Mun Tavod, 6 days you work, V'kach HaPirush V'Kadsheyu, Sh'Hashem Shabbat Bo Mikol Melachto. That the word Shabbat means to cease work. Vatam, why? Lidabek imbarach Hashem. That why do you rest on Shabbat? In order to become close to God. Kasher katov v'parshav v'yachulu. Ki Hashem kodesh zeh hayom v'zimein l'kabel ha'nefashot tosefet chachma yoter mikol yamim. Shabbat is a day that you get enough nefesh, neshama yitera. It's a day that you have more spirituality. It's a day that you can be involved in God more. Al ken katov Berach Hashem, v'kfar pirashti zeh b'mizmor l'yom haShabbat. Ra'inu ki shnat haShmita domeh l'Shabbat, ki gam hi shvi'it b'shanim, v'tziva Hashem shikru haTorah b'tchilat haShana. By the way, this is what fools people. No, this is what fools people into thinking that he means it's the beginning of the seventh year. B'tchilat haShana could be the beginning of the eighth year. It is the beginning of the year, but hold on. B'tchilat haShana neged anashim v'nashim b'taf. So you're correct. What you said before is 100% correct. Word for word what the Ibn Ezra says over here. It is just like Shabbat, and just like on Shabbat, one is involved in spiritual things. Therefore, this seventh year, one would be involved in it. As I said, the fact that he said B'tchilat HaShana is what got certain people to think the Ibn Ezra meant that this is done on the beginning of the Shemitah year. I'm not convinced that that's what he means over here, but it deals with a different piece of intrigue, which is this really is this the beginning of the year or the end of the year, which we'll see if I can get to still. Yeah. No, that's not the hint. That's not the hint. Go back again. The hint was the fact that they have to let the land lie fallow, that's written black and white in the Chumash. That we'll see in a second. Black and white. The hint was, what are they supposed to be doing during this time? I could just say it's free time. I can go tour. I could do whatever I want. The fact that they should be involved in learning Torah during the Shemitah year, that is not said any place clearly, which means somebody could imagine that when it talks about Shemitah in the Torah, it says 6 years work, seventh year off, don't do any agricultural work, rather sit and study Torah. Which means if you read a lot of the books that written today about Shemitah, that's what they're going to say. They'll just add the last part, and therefore the person should sit and study Torah. That last line sit and study Torah is not found. It's hinted at in the Ibn Ezra. That's what they get it from. But as I said, the others, Chizkuni and others, say it as well, which means that I don't think it's just a hint of one. I think it's the way that they understood it. The Ibn Ezra is very nice, the way that he explains it over here. But again, he doesn't say it in the context of Shemitah. He says in the context of Shabbat, where he sees obviously Shemitah as being an extension of Shabbat. Now, there's a side to all this. There's one more side that we haven't gotten to yet, that I still want to fill in, because I'm going to ask it one more time. I've already asked it a couple times. And why on Sukkot? Right. That's like the last part. Okay, so why on Sukkot? So on the one hand, you can tell me, again, very practical aspect of this. If we're doing this at the end of the Shemitah year, so basically look at your calendar, okay? Rosh Hashanah, busy, right? Tzom Gedalia, busy. Yom Kippur, busy. First day of Sukkot, busy. So when do we do it? Our first opportunity, when we're free. Do you like that answer? It's a very good answer. I don't like it. But I'm saying it could just be that there's no other... This is the first time that we have an opportunity. An opportunity... No. The idea that the year ends, Hoshana Rabbah, is a Kabbalistic idea, which I can assure you most of the authorities here we're not familiar with. Okay, source number 17 is going to introduce Shemitah for the first time, and it's also going to introduce something else together in the same context, and the context is important. It's the holiday of Sukkot. The only thing about the holiday of Sukkot in this context, it's not going to be called the holiday of Sukkot. This is Parashat Mishpatim. V'shei shanim tizra'at artzecha, v'asafta t'tvuata. 6 years you plant, v'asafta t'tvuata. What does v'asafta mean? Okay, notice that word. That is the key word till we finish today. Again, shei shanim tizra'at artzecha, v'asafta t'tvuata. You plant and you gather what you plant. V'hashvi'it tishmetena. On the seventh year, there should be Shemitah. Unitashta, which means you really have to like abandon it. Ve'echlu ev yonei amecha, the poor can come and take it. Ve'yitrom tochel chayat ha-sadeh, and the animals can come. L'kar mecha l'zeitecha. And there's specific focus here to the vineyards and to the olives. From there it goes on to Sheishim Tasema Asecha Biyom Shvit Tishbot Lamani Nuach Shachor Vachamacha Vinafesh Ben Amatcha Vager Uvachol Shemarti Lechem Tishmu Veshem Elohim Achirim Lo Teskir Lo Shma Al Picha Shalosh Regalim Techogli B'Shana, and then it rolls into the Shalosh Regalim. Et Chag Matzot Tishmor Shivat Yemim Techal Matzot Kasher Tzivcha Lamoed Chodosh Aviv Kivo Yatzat Mitzrayim V'Lo Yiru Penai Rekam V'Chag HaKatzir Bikurim Asecha Shetizra B'Sadeh V'Chag HaAsif. Okay, what's interesting about the way Sukkot is described over here? One, it's called Chag HaAsif. Second, it's called B'Tzeit HaShanah. So that itself is interesting. Because again, what was our starting point that we had a little difficulty? This is going to be in the eighth year. Miketz sheva shanim b'moed shnata shmita b'chag ha-sukkot. So we're worried, hold it, which year is this? But what are we described over here? When Sukkot is? Sukkot is described as when? B'tzeit ha-shanah. So if Sukkot is b'tzeit ha-shanah, so again, we're back on our same point, is when exactly is the year over? The Ibn Ezra, which is in the next line, but you don't see it, 17 and a half, v'chag ha-asif b'tzeit ha-shanah, when did they start planting the new crops? Not until the next month, Mar Cheshvan. Which means, which year are we talking about? Are we talking about the calendar year, which you can say begins on the first day of Tishrei, or are we talking about the agricultural year? So if we're talking about the agricultural year, it's what is Sukkot? It is the end of the year. And what do you do on Sukkot? Before you get to pray for him, what do you do on Sukkot? Again, the first introduction we have to Sukkot, what is it called here? And what does Asif mean? So what are we gathering? Which means it's the end of the year, we're gathering all the produce from this year. which means Sukkot is about gathering everything this year. How is Shemitah introduced over here in the same section, a couple of verses before? Sheishanim tizrata tzecheva asafta tzvota. 6 years you gather, and what happens in the seventh year? You abandon. Anybody have a question for me now?
When?
Perfect. So now, this is exactly what we're now being led towards. Look at source 19, Chag Asif, Rav Chaim Paltiel, Zeh Chag HaSukkot, Shehu Chag Asif, Hashem Mimanlim, Bo Hagronot, Ubo Tziva Katuv, Leshev B'Sukkot, Lizekaron, Ki Bamidbar Yashvu, Bo Alim, Lo Yalem Karka, Velo Dagan, V'Tirosh Kamo Achshav. This is beautiful. What does Sukkot source remind us of? The time that we didn't have any land, and we didn't have anything, and everything was, we lived in a midbar, which is ownerless, and so on. And that's very interesting parallel to what? To Shemitah. The end of source 20, Ektava Kabbalah, he writes, Mikoma koma mar hagra, b'perusho l'mishna, sof shviyit, midichtiv, mikeitz sheva shanim, b'moid shnat hashmat, b'chag ha-sukot, shma'inan di'ikar shmita nikra ad chag ha-sukot shol shana hashminit. Ha'chana mi'chag ha-sukot nikra sof l'shana shavra. Again, he's saying that shmita is an agricultural law, so it follows the agricultural calendar, so in a certain sense, shmita is until Sukkot. Again, I'm not telling you that you can't plant already. You can plant. You can even go to, if you have to, you can even go. But he's saying it's still appropriate to call the end of the agricultural year until this point, and he says, he's quoting the Gra, which I think we all now understood by ourselves. Source 21, again, looking at the Shalosh Regalim. Chag HaSukkot ta'aseh lecha shivat yamim be'asvecha megornecha umikavecha. Which two things were focused on specifically in this description of Chag HaSukkot? Chag HaSukkot ta'aseh lecha shivat yamim. Okay, the Goren and the Yekev. What is a Goren and what is a Yekev?
Wheat and wine,
right? V'samachta b'chagecha. Ato uvincho uvitech v'adachov v'amatchov v'levi v'agir v'yatom v'amonah asher b'sharecha. So over here, Chag HaAsif, Chag HaSukkot, is described with specific focus on the goren, wheat, on wine, the yekev. And then we're told, you gather all this together, v'samachta, who? You and your children, and v'adachov v'amatchov v'levi v'agir v'yatom, and so on. Rashi, source 22, ba'asvecha, correct. Bizman ha'asif, shata machnis lebayit peirot ha'kayitz. Davar acher, ba'asvecha, migoncha, mikavechel, lama she misachachim et ha'sukah b'psolat goren v'yekev. That specifically of these things, because this is the right time of year, is how you make the sukkah as well. Source 25, hakel, the Chizkuni, who we had seen a little bit before, Hakela Ta'am, Shakol Pnuyim Ve'ein Osef Lebayit Klum Ki Akol Hefker. Is that what you said? Yes? Is that what you said? Word for word. Sorry. Word for word. Source 25, the Chizkuni. Hakela Ta'am, Shakol Pnuyim Ve'ein Osef Lebayit Klum Ki Akol Hefker. Which means when we get to... Exactly. So there you see. Whenever dead rabbis say it, we like it better. Okay, so there you have. He says the exact words. Gather the people instead, Naomi said it also, instead of gathering the crops. Why? Because we don't have the same kind of crops on the seventh year like we're going to have on the other 6 years. So he says, Hakela ta'am, shakol pnuyim, ve'ein osef lebayit klum, ki hakol hefker. Chag HaSukkot, the Meshach Chachma, Chag HaSukkot, Ta'aseh Lecha Shivat Yamim, V'Asvecha Migoncha Mikavecha, U'Vishmit V'Yovel, She'ein Sham Asifat Shagorin Shoyekev, Gam Kein Shivat Yamim Techog LaHashem, Ki Recha B'Bitachon Atzun, Ki B'Schar Zeh Yivrecha HaShem La'atid, B'Chol Tvotcha, V'Yita'ach Sameach, Pirish Tesmach, B'Lo Asifa Shagorin V'Yekev, Rach Simcha Shil Mitzvah. So again, he's saying the same thing, that when you compare Sukkot, Chag HaAsif, compared to of the Shemitah year, post-Shemitah year, with the other 6 years, If we didn't have Hakel, what would we have? We'd have a very sad Chag HaAsif. Why would it be a very sad Chag HaAsif? Because compared to the other 6 years, we didn't plant this year, right? We didn't work on the land. Maybe some things grew by themselves. Whatever grew, everybody just emptied you out anyway and just took whatever they wanted to take. And now Shemitah's over. You look at your bare field and I have to gather and go to Yerushalayim. But what's my problem? I don't have anything to gather. What kind of Chag HaAsif is this? So that's exactly what it says. So instead of the gathering of the fruit, this becomes, it said, Hakel et ha'anashim v'nashim v'ataf. Instead it becomes like, let's gather all the people together. And again, the focus then gets somewhat shifted. I'll talk through, well, maybe we'll look a little bit at that. What I want you to notice is that the prohibitions regarding Shemitah are very similar to the tzivui regarding Sukkot, regarding Chag HaAsif. What you're not doing on Shemitah is the same thing you're supposed to be doing during Chag HaAsif, which means, in a sense, Shemitah and Chag HaAsif are opposites. They're polar opposites. And therefore, the keeping of Sukkot, which is a time of happiness, becomes also impossible. So what shift did the Torah just now do, which is a wonderful shift? Instead of focusing on the produce, what are we now focusing? So one, you said the people, but we're focusing on something else as well. What's the second element? Learning and the Torah. Which means now we focus on the Torah instead of just focusing on the produce. And that shift should bring about the same kind of simcha, the same kind of joy, and the same kind of celebration that we have the other 6 years by having the produce in our hands. What the commentaries then see is like maybe taking it one step further, and maybe this will now rekindle, re-inspire, refocus, as I now face the new 6 years, the 6 years I'm going to work, in terms of doing things the right way. Again, the agricultural society is very much a society which takes care of others in terms of social responsibility, in terms of the rules of, and you can choose which one you want, Truma and Maser and Peyah and Leket and Shichacha and so on. That means there is a responsibility for all these others as well. So on Sukkot of the 6 years, again, Sukkot of the 6 years, what do? I gather my fruits together, I go to Jerusalem, I gather the family together, we all go together, and there's real happiness because I have the produce. At the same time, I'm praying for more produce, I take the lulav and the etrog, and I'm praying for rain, praying for more produce, and I do one other thing which is interesting. What is that? I build the sukkah, leave the regular house, have this little hut, and don't take all of the produce and all of the money and all the possessions, all that seriously, and let's also focus on this. God is on top of us. God is in charge. And this whole, again, it's a beautiful dichotomy. When it comes to the seventh year, the whole year is actually Sukkot. I hope you understand what I'm saying. The whole year is, no, yeah, the whole... Yeah, the whole year you're living in a sukkah, really. The whole seventh year is Sukkot, because the whole year you're not in the normal life. And the whole year, it's one of bitachon, that God is on top of you, and God is in charge, and God is the one who's doing it. Which means, it's not just, that's why I want to go a little bit sharper, it's not just the learning of Torah at the end of the seventh year, which really solidifies it. It's the whole experience of the whole seventh year. The whole experience is one of real emunah, which is really, that's why I want to say it again, that Shemitah and Sukkot, I said, what does one have to do with the other? They're so closely related in terms of both, on the one hand, the produce, right, and on the other hand, this trust and belief in God. Those are the elements that we have exactly what Shemitah is about. But again, there's a technical problem, a huge technical problem, on Shemitah of the post, sorry, on Sukkot, on the post-Shemitah year, on Chag HaAsif, a year that it was Asur LaAsif, and to plant, and to plow, and so on. So now I come to Jerusalem, so now what do? So gather everyone together. Focus on Torah instead of focusing on the produce. Rekindle the efforts to instill the belief and the learning and so on. as we move forward, and I think that once we understand these elements, we realize that this idea of Hakel, it wasn't just, as I suggested before, that basically God looks at the calendar, okay, when do I have a free date that I can throw the Hakel into it? It wasn't a question of a free day. It's really laws which absolutely connect to one another, and therefore this whole thing that we saw before about, you know, the men learning, the women learning, and the taf, not just bring them for schar, it's much more than that. It's just like on Sukkot, I bring everyone together, v'samachta, everyone together, including Ager Asher B'Shar, I bring everyone together for the simcha. Now at the end of the Shemitah year, on Sukkot again, I have to bring everyone together for the Simcha, although the Simcha is a little different. This is the Simcha which comes out of a successful year that I lived with Bitachon. Which means, in a certain sense, you can even say to me that on this year, the Sukkah is less necessary than the other 6 years, but we still will use the Sukkah. And we're still going to gather whatever it is that we can gather, and we're still going to come, but we're still going to do it. But the idea of Shemitah and the idea of Chag HaAsif are actually much more related by being opposites than I think we ever suggested before we began. So everyone should have a Gemar Chatima Tova, and have a good Hakel.